Blog Talk Radio.
The domesticated cat, one of my favorite animals. The domesticated cat is thought to have roots in the Middle East and Near East. It is said that the Near Eastern wildcat still roams the deserts of Israel. It is thought that this wildcat is the ancient ancestor to what eventually became our beloved, and sometimes not so beloved, house cat. Researchers believe that there were nearly 40 species of these wildcats about 10,000 years ago. Some of the animals began their own natural experiment. They thought to themselves, these humans, they seem to have things that we cats need. So an amazing natural experiment occurred. The wildcats started to live alongside of humans. The farmers, the humans, did not really seem to mind this. After all, these cats were good for the farmers' own food supply. Getting rid of rodents that wreak havoc on the farm. The rodents eat precious crops and infect other animals with parasites. So this new friend to humankind's food supply was a very welcome guest. As time passed, the relationship between human and cat evolved into that of an additional household family member, a pet. Through the years, as things progressed, and as crossbreeding occurred, we now have an estimated 73 breeds of felines. This crossbreeding is a form of genetic engineering, a form that most people do not object to. Now, as we look into the present, we see a reality where scientists are extracting DNA from one species and splicing it with the DNA of another. What have we done? Some have cried out. We used to encourage various types of animals to breed with one another, and now we are playing God. Now we have glow-in-the-dark, and that's true, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you that do not know, glow-in-the-dark cats and mice. Now we have mice with human ears growing on their backs. We have tomatoes mixed with the DNA of flounder's blood.
The full moonlit night.
We have wheat that has thousands of times more gluten than necessary. Apples that do not turn brown. And there's even mention of the splicing of human DNA into animals and plants. Today we discuss the extremely controversial topic of genetic engineering, synthetic biology. Welcome to Main Street Network.
Consequences.
everyone, and welcome to Main Street Universe, the show reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. Remember that every episode is recorded in our archive section. And what does this mean? This means that next week, you can listen to last week, this week, on MainStreetUniverse.com in the archive section and on our Blog Talk Radio page. I'd like to take this time to give a shout-out to my co-host, Mr. Kevin Baird.
Thank
Hello,
you.
Kevin.
Thank you. Another day in paradise.
Kevin Baird can be reached at www.templeofgaia.com. He can also be seen lurking around the Weemsbot Museum, the second most haunted place in Virginia, it is said. He is also a member of a group known as Artisans United. And your Weemsbot Museum thing you do every Thursday, right?
From noon till about 4 or 5.
Doing a little testing, doing a little ghost recording, or ghost electromagnetic sensing with your K2 sensor.
Yes, and soon we'll probably be doing ghost circles. We'll bring together and we'll sit up in one of the rooms that are very haunted and see what they have to say.
Awesome. And now we'll send a few shout-outs to our friends here. Miss Selena Fox at CircleSanctuary.org and our friend Dr. Zohara Hieronymus at www.zoharaonline.com with her book, Sanctuary of the Divine Presence, that she has recently released and had published, as well as our friend Mark Sutton. Heart Healthy Pizza is the name of the book that he has on the market now, www.hearthealthypizza.com. That's vegan pizza, folks, pizza without cheese, as well as pizza without soy cheese. He uses a mixture of grains and other things as well. I've been sending out the invite to beekeepers for my eventual Save the Bees episode that I've been trying to put together here at Main Street Universe, as we are losing somewhere around 70% of our honeybee population. That's the worst projected number that I have heard thus far. I've heard as low as 30, I've heard as much as 70, so maybe somewhere in between is the reality.
And we won't feel the sting of their absence until later.
That's right. Some say possible world famine. And today we were discussing genetic engineering, synthetic biology. And before we get to our topic, I would just like to say that my co-host as well is the creator of an oracle deck known as the Horizon Oracle, from which we may be reading from later, and he may be doing a segment about one, two, or three of his cards later. So I just wanted to get that out there.
A Friday show that's devoted to that, too.
Yes, his show is Walking on the Sidewalk, and that was going to be my next point. And that is on Fridays from 6 to 7. Right now, our highest-rated show on the Main Street Universe Network. And we also have, on Thursdays, Zarayana Radio with Evan Pass. I was looking at Zohara online here, and I was like, I almost said it wrong. Yes, Zarayana Radio with Evan Pass, who's been with us for a little while now. On the Main Street Universe Radio Network is what we are now, as a radio network. Before we were one show, this show, the flagship show, the Wednesday show, and now we are a network of three shows.
What is Evan Pass's deal? Like, he went to India for a while?
He is someone who has a degree in comparative religious studies, and he has a fascination with myth. His practice, he refers to himself, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, as a techno-pagan who's extremely eclectic and believes in creating his own pantheon as well. But a lot of what he draws from is from his experience with Eastern and Hindu pantheon. And yes, he did live in India for a short time and studied under a Brahmin while he was there and was very moved by the experience.
Oh, very.
So that is Zarayana Radio with Evan Pass, sort of our version of a Joseph Campbell show. It's a myth show. So now,
in the room.
Hello, Marcy. How are you this morning? It's nice 11 a.m. that we celebrate here. Yes, it is 11-11-22, a power number in numerology. Very good number. And an amazingly, amazingly beautiful day outside. We've had so many great days here, and we also have fallen on holidays. But now let's get back to our topic. Genetic engineering. Synthetic biology. In our ancient religious systems, many images can be found of divine and powerful beings, often appearing to be part human and part animal. In the Egyptian pantheon, there is Horus, who is depicted with a human's body and a falcon's head, Sekhmet, with the head of a lioness and a female's body. In the Hindu pantheon, there is Ganesha, a god with human-like body and an elephant's head. Were the ancients trying to communicate a lost technology? Were they trying to communicate to us a lost technology through pictures and images and statues? Well, I think most people believe that the ancient ones, our ancestors, were simply describing in picture form, as best they could, forces in the universe that they may have encountered. So, what of the divine nature of genetic manipulation? Is it ethical? Is it natural? Either way, it is here to stay, and it's very, very real. We will explore the ethics of this later. Let us look now into what we have in the present day. Let us look at gene splicing. This is the form of genetic engineering which involves the cutting and splicing of deoxyribonucleic acid, or DNA. Scientists have been working with DNA very closely since it was first discovered in the mid-20th century, 1953. That DNA contained structural information. It was the revelation of the structural information that was discovered in the 50s. DNA, it said, had been discovered in the late 1800s. But the information it contained to work with was discovered somewhere around 1953. So now we have taken a huge step from selective breeding to the microscopic cutting and pasting of raw genetic information. The DNA has been decoded and measured in laboratories, and many scientists believe that this technology can be used to create superfoods and new and more productive animals, as well as treating humans and even preventing genetically predestined diseases and conditions. So, okay. It does not sound all bad when one considers that. Through DNA manipulation, one may be stricken with an illness that many of the folks in their family are stricken with, but a test can be done to project that you're going to come down with this, such as, say, you have the example of, well, everyone in my family, when they become about 60 or so, comes down with Alzheimer's or a form of cancer, or even younger than that. Well, some scientists are saying what they can do is take a blood test and project you're going to get this condition and then potentially do something to reverse this genetic code. We can also get into, with genetic manipulation, what about the possibility of creating stronger, faster humans? What if in the future we are all born strong healthy, and with superior, faster-working brains. This is also being discussed, the genetic manipulation of the brain to make it more like a faster-working computer. To some, this sounds very tempting, very exciting. Now, here is the issue that so many are having with all of this DNA play, if you will. Something very, very basic. We all need it, we all consume it, we all love it, and that is food. For decades, the food industries have been playing God with our food. And with little or no press from the old media, our crops and the meat that humans consume has been manipulated in ways that so many are not really aware of. Let's take a look at the rise in gluten allergies. I am 41 years old. I never met a human with a gluten allergy until just a few years back. And I have always lived in populated areas. Well, this is because we are so often fed, and have been for a while, this isn't really that new, dwarf wheat. This wheat contains far more chromosomes and far more gluten than natural wheat. It has become commonplace. And now I know many, many, many people who suffer from this gluten allergy. One of them being our future guest, the female singer from Woven Green, who they'll be joining us on the 23rd. How about the peanut allergies? Well, I do remember a child or two when I was a kid having a peanut allergy or a tree nut allergy. Not as severe as now. But here's why. And I was a kid in the 70s and 80s. These peanut allergies have tripled since 1997. Now let us take a look at genetically modified soybeans. Now they are saying that soybeans are shown to be harmful. Many people are being told now not to even eat soy. Soy, before the genetic tinkering, was once championed as a healthy protein alternative for vegetarians, and now we are told to stay away from it. And now we have people who are highly allergic to soy. Again, an allergy I don't really remember as a child, and I'm not that old, folks. I'm 41. So we're talking about some very basic things here. We're talking about wheat, soy, meat that we consume. We're talking about food. Let's move to corn, GMO corn, or genetically modified corn, is now said to be linked to obesity and organ failure. I'll say it again. Corn is being linked to organ failure. I personally feel that these food companies have a few things to answer to and have gotten away with a lot over the years. It does not mean that I think that they were out to do harm, by the way. I'm not being that conspiratorial about it. I think these things have just gone untested and unregulated over the years. And how can one possibly know the synergistic effects, the long-term effects, the interactive effects of messing with all of our seeds from which we grow all of our food? And another frightening argument that people might bring up is, what if we one day run out of the natural normal seeds? I personally don't think that'll happen, because now people are becoming more aware. I work in the food business right now, and people are demanding to have the real food. They're saying, I don't want this Gen Mod stuff. A lot of people are demanding organic, and it's becoming en vogue, and that's a good thing. people can make fun of it for being PC all they want, but this is a very real issue. And to me, it's not political, and it's not Democrat and Republican. This is food. This is corn, meat, soy, wheat. This is an issue for all human beings to pay very close attention to. Okay. So now, let us look at things a bit differently. Let us look at something called biotechnology. Some say we are at the beginning of what is called the biomolecular revolution, as it is sometimes called. Some say that with the manipulation of genetic material, we can cure cancer. As I said before, by taking a simple blood test, a genetic condition can be detected, treated, and eradicated. Imagine finding out, hey, I won't get that condition that everyone in my family gets when they reach a certain age. It is said that modern medicine has three basic stages. And by this, I'm sort of referring to modern medicine as we know it in the doctor's office. Three stages that it has evolved through over time. The first stage being germ theory, taking care of sanitation. That was huge back in the day. People were like, why is the plague spreading so much? Well, you got rats and you had highly unsanitary conditions. Something else, folks, that goes back to my intro to this show, something else that helped the spread of the plague was when the superstitions of cats grew, about how cats were devilish and evil, they started eradicating cats. So what did you take away? You took away the rat's natural predator. So just another bit of meddling that humankind has done to mess things up for themselves. But back to the point, the three basic modern medicine evolutionary stages being germ theory and sanitation, which was a huge progress for us in civilization. Antibiotics then came along in surgery, both in category two. And now, what is being called the third evolutionary stage of modern medicine? Genetic medicine, of course, our topic today, in part. There is an example from a documentary I saw on this, of a child who was saved from SCID. SCID stands for Severe Combined Immune Deficiency. Basically, folks, that means no immune system at all. So, of course, most children with SCID will die within a year. And this child was saved through genetic medicine, biotechnology, biomolecular manipulation. So, of course, I would say some genetic therapy and genetic manipulation is for the common good, treating diseases and conditions. And you could say that this could be economically liberating. Imagine no longer having to pay for drugs or having to pay for treatments because your condition has been cured by genetic science. So it could be a big money saver, which could also stop it from coming about, unless they started charging an arm and a leg for it, I guess. Now, let's take another look at this genetic science, and that is a little thing known as synthetic biology.
Ta-da.
This starts by treating DNA code as a computer language, recoding and feeding this information into a biological cell rather than a computer. The cell would be, in effect, the software, if you will. The cell would also as well create or build or reproduce its own hardware. This technology synthetic biology is different from gene splicing. Whereas gene splicing is you take a strand of DNA, cut it, and then paste it into a strand of another one from another species. This is literally recoding and reforming and creating, in fact, a brand new DNA cell structure. This is done by manipulating the sample DNA of sugar. So some people might be saying, well, how can they just create a DNA in a lab? They don't necessarily create the entire thing outright. What they in fact do is take sugar DNA, enter its codes, decode it, then enter the recoding that they desire into a computer, and then that goes into a machine, which is more advanced than I think I can explain on the radio right now, that sends this new coded information into cells that are reformed according to their new human design. So it becomes a designer form of DNA. And I've heard as well that there are places where scientists can just sort of buy these on the internet and go, oh, I want this one that's been redesigned and that one and that one and that one. So
yeah, eBay for those things.
Absolutely. So what we could literally have here is a synthetic new form of life inspired by nature, created by humans, or perhaps slightly more accurately, reprogrammed by humans. So that is today's topic. We're talking about the manipulation of genetic material. I think, let us go first to the food argument. And first of all, I'd like to ask somebody that's close in age to me, but maybe just a couple years older, Mr. Kevin Baird. Do you remember as a kid all these gluten allergies?
All I knew for allergies were pollen.
Yeah. What about tree nuts?
Nope, nothing.
And that's the same for me. I remember a few tree nut allergies, but they weren't that severe. They were like, okay, don't eat that, or they'll maybe, I don't know, puff up a little bit or break out or something. I don't remember in detail. But now they have the kids with no bringing peanut butter to school, and they have all these rules now. I've heard of stories of children that can't be in the same room where there's a lot of concentrated gluten. I mean in the same room, or they start to have allergic reactions to it. I'm trying to remember the specific product that the lady was giving me an example of. And it's just, that's how do you function in life if you got to watch out if there's gluten in the room? I mean, I know that's a very extreme example, but that's where we're headed with this nonsense. Now, I'd also like to say, for the record, I'm not against every form of this genetic science. The aspects that I don't like about it is when they mess with the food supply. If you're talking about using genetic science to help treat diseases for volunteers to help themselves and to volunteer for a treatment, I got nothing against that. And if it can help to prevent genetic conditions and diseases and such, and again, the person's volunteering, nobody's forcing them to do it, I have absolutely no problem with that at all. And if I was sick and dying, maybe I would try something like that if it was known to be available for whatever the condition is. Now, there's a lot of directions you can take this discussion in. And here's one I thought that you might be interested in, Kevin. One of the arguments I heard on the side of synthetic biology, literally reprogramming cells to be a recreated life form, was the idea of terraforming planets. Now, what that means is taking a planet like Mars, re-engineering the genetic codes for life forms to live on its surface and making it what is now a planet with not much life on it, making it a vibrant planet full of life, a slightly different type of life than the conditions that we would have here on Earth for. But this is being considered an actual possibility on small scales. I don't know if they're talking about a whole planet, but taking an experiment with a surface that doesn't have life, reconfiguring its genetic code, blah, 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 however that's done, and then making it a place full and teeming with life. And, of course, these would be slightly new forms of life. So these are very fascinating things, and I also think they pose great dangers as well. Again, most of my moral objections to any of this genetic science is when they mess with our mass food supply. That's actually the part that gets to me. Experimenting with trying to treat diseases, okay, doesn't bother me, especially, again, on a voluntary basis. I think all those things are productive. I think it's probably just going to be the future anyway, so you might as well just get used to it. It can go, now, messing with humans like that can also go in some kind of, you know, creepy directions too. Like you start thinking of what was the movie Gattaca, and you had the genetically superior people here and then the inferiors down here kind of living in the underworld, and you start creating these sort of divisions. Or maybe the rich people get to be super people, right? They get to kind of be the strong, fast ones, or vice versa. Maybe they start using genetic manipulation to create strong servant races of people. Servant beings that are strong and fast.
They've done that already.
And some people use the ancient astronaut theories as being that they were creating us to be a servant race or a servant.
This evolving is sort of, can be compared to making the outhouse obsolete and creating a water closet that we can start using and making life a little better. We don't know. It looks bad. It could be good.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's all bad. I was saying that the part I don't like the most is when they mess with all the seeds and all the food supply. But you mean, are you saying they have like rooms inside a house now where you can open the door and
exactly.
and urinate into this? Sorry. But, and I've been using an outhouse all this time. Or as I've heard people say, you know, is, I believe it was a joke that President Bush tried to crack, or his writers, when they would say, you would see the light bulb as anti-candle legislation, you know, you're not for progress. Now, I am not against progress at all. And again, I said, I'm certainly for, if they're trying to find ways to reverse medical conditions, and the people involved are, of course, completely voluntary and all of that sort of thing, I've got nothing against that at all. And the issues I have are things like Monsanto, for example, creating genetically modified corn that now people are thinking causes the failure of organs. Don't really remember a big news story about, oh, we're about to mess with all the corn. Now, of course, it's not all of it, so I'm not trying to be too doom and gloom about it. In fact, as I said before, market conditions can help. And right now, people in the food markets, especially in areas where they have any kind of education on this, oftentimes, for better or for worse, in slightly more affluent areas, these grocery stores, when you go into more wealthy areas of the country, it's organic, it's non-GMO. Now, when you go to the Walmarts, the Wally Worlds, the Food Lions, well, I guess I won't throw Food Lion on the bus in case they're not as guilty as I think, but I know Walmart is one that's known for carrying a lot of the genetically modified food in their big grocery stores, and all stores are. So you look for the label, look for non-GMO, and like I said, in affluent areas, those grocery stores aren't carrying a lot of this junk. it's people are demanding their Whole Foods, and even Trader Joe's where I work, you know, people are always saying, is it this, is it that, is it, you know, in the case of Trader Joe's, it isn't really that expensive. It's one reason people go there. I know they're not paying me a dime for this. If Trader Joe's became one of our sponsors, I wouldn't have to work there anymore. We could retire on that. Let's tap into the big money. The joke I sometimes make to people in my line, whenever like an item doesn't ring up, is they'll go, oh, it's free. I was like, no, I can't give it to you for free because the food market in a grocery store, the markup for food isn't very high. So there's not much profit in the food business. And you know how I know that? Because the billionaires that own this company tell me that all the time. So, haha. But back to the point, is that to me the worst part of it is the food aspect. Because some fear, what if we just run out of natural seeds? And then we're just stuck with everything that's been genetically manipulated and we have to wait until years down the road where we can super, double, triple, quadruple, re-genetically mutate them so that they're not harmful anymore. So that becomes sort of the caution that people want to send out is how safe can genetically modified food be when you intake it, when there's been absolutely no long-term test on the synergistic effects of these things. And the only test is we're the guinea pigs and oops, something happens sometimes. And then they go, oh, okay. We didn't know that. But back to the idea of using genetic science as medicine. It does pose some pretty amazing possibilities. So I'll get back to the positive side of this for a while, or what I see as the more positive side of this for a while. Again, I love the idea that some are proposing to be able to put life onto lifeless surfaces. I love that idea, and I would love to see that in a lab somewhere. Even if it's wrong, you know you would be curious. Would you not be curious to see that? Somebody create a little world on a lifeless world, teeming with life. So this could truly be the super science that, if you remember, Kevin, which Star Trek movie was that? Where the guy, it was the Genesis program. Right. And the guy, I think it was Kirk's son, Captain James T. Kirk's son, creates this paradise, you know, sort of on this in this lifeless area of this ship. And he creates this world based on a similar technology. And they asked him, well, how did you... You know, he used some sort of controversial anti-biomatter or whatever to solve some equations, and then it all became unstable life and all started to break down. I can't remember which movie that was.
Wrath of Khan.
Was it Wrath of Khan? Was it the second one?
It was the Wrath of Khan.
You quick bastard. You killed my son. If anybody remembers that. Dramatic. Oh, the James T. Kirk has to do it every once in a while. In Star Trek, Wrath of Khan. Yes, it was Wrath of Khan. And then later on, they send Spock to the Genesis planet, where he sends this technology and there's life new forming on this planet. And
they buried him on the planet.
Yeah, and it helps bring him back to life and all this other stuff. So we're actually approaching the discussion of that technology now, which that's kind of interesting. And also, of course, a bit dangerous, but such is interesting discovery, I guess, as Kevin said. The dangerous bathrooms in our house when we had the nice, safe outhouses keeping all that stuff away from us. But I still say that we err on the side of caution for the food supply stuff, because to me that's just... You can create genetic super beings. But what good is it going to be if they're allergic to everything on the earth? You'll have to keep recreating these super beings over and over again, like I said, until they're so manipulated that they're not allergic to everything you manipulated. So you might as well just keep the food natural, folks. If you want to use this stuff for medical practices, I understand completely. But there's way too many allergies being created out there right now that any of us over the age of 30, do not, either we don't remember it or it was just barely there. Like you hear about somebody, you know, oh, I heard so-and-so got this allergy, and it wasn't nearly as severe back then either. I don't remember people dying from peanuts. I never remember that. I do remember a mild tree nut allergy is what I do remember. So, there's also, of course, another side to the scientific portion of this, I mean the medical scientific portion of this, which would be the possibility of immortality, regrowing of organs, getting back to some ancient astronaut stuff again. Remember the movie Stargate? They basically, now they did it by entering this chamber that did it with sort of energy, but he was basically always sort of regenerating himself, or the form that he took. In that case, it was of a teenage boy that was Ra, took over this boy's body, and then kept regenerating it any time something bad happened. And would just do it as general maintenance, I think, too, right? Like he would just get into this sort of compression.
Sarcophagus.
Yeah, generation chamber, and regenerate himself every now and again. So he stayed young for millions of years even. And they even said in the end of that movie, that's why I chose the human race. Remember he says in his little discussion at the end of it with Ra, I don't know if you saw that movie, Kevin. And he says, that's why I chose this planet, because, or this species, meaning the humans, because they're so easy to regenerate. So there was something about human-like beings that, because they self-heal, that I guess is sort of what they're hinting at, that you can sort of encourage that process even more, and easy to enhance, and all of that sort of thing.
Known as the Goa'uld.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd forgotten the name. What I thought was funny about that movie, I felt like it could have been another 5 hours. It seemed like such a big topic. I remember thinking the movie was short.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Did you get that impression when you saw that? I was like, I wanted to see like much longer conversations with the, or back and forth with the alien god-like quote-unquote beings. I wanted to see more interaction with them, like conversationally about like things they knew and stuff, you know, and even maybe with the captured human and talking back and forth with the language expert guy. It was kind of, but they were just kind of grunting away, and it just, I think I wanted more intellectually from that movie. I felt very disappointed when I saw it. I remember wanting more, but I'm like that. I go to a movie, and every movie today to me is a bunch of explosions. It's explosions and a loud soundtrack. And every once in a while, somebody sneaks a story in the middle of the explosions. And that one wasn't one of the worst offenders, you know, of that. Some movies are just ridiculous. You go there, and it's one giant car chase. And
Avatar was pretty long.
I liked Avatar. Some people didn't. I liked it. I remember one critic calling it Dances with Wolves in Outer Space. But without Kevin Costner. But I still thought it was a great movie. It was certainly an attractive movie. It was a beautiful film to watch in the theater.
And 3D.
Yeah, the great colors and some interesting concepts. They had some fun concepts in that movie that I love. The idea that you could hook up to a program and have this, basically what the movie was about, this avatar, this big blue being that you could run around in, and the main character, of course, in his real physical form was a handicapped human that couldn't walk, and in his avatar form, of course, he can jump and fly on top of this little dragon thing or whatever it was called, so he could experience all of this life that he couldn't experience in his human form. And again, one could say, I'm sure that's a form of genetic science, possibly creating these beings. Of course, they had to be filled with a human spark hooked up to computers, and their brains controlled what they did. And those were some interesting concepts. But that's the kind of stuff we're looking at with genetic science, I think. You're creating this new flesh, literally creating new flesh, new organs. This is what they're talking about in the genetic world. Perhaps new beings entirely. So now we would come to an entirely new argument. What if you created an entire new human being or something almost like a human being? Someone asked if it
opens its eyes, I'm just saying it again, if it's like a human being, humanoid, and starts looking around, does this being have a soul? Is this a spiritual being? Is this a horror movie scenario of that? It could be. You could almost see like a movie about this. If there isn't already one, there might be one already there. I don't know. Of you create like these entire groups of people just to harvest their organs. I think there is a movie about that somewhere. But it turns out they're actually real people just because you...
Soma.
It was something like that, yeah. And they just, they're just... But I don't think that would happen. I think if something's looking up and talking to you, they're not going to... Hopefully that wouldn't happen. And I believe because if it has the energy to walk around and look at you, then it does have a soul because the soul is energy. So to me, that's a pretty easy question to answer. You know, I would say if that thing is getting up and walking around and looking at you and trying to communicate, then yes, it has a soul because it's now part of the energy collective of the universe. Now it just would be educating that soul and developing it. So I think that is another side to it altogether, not just the regrowing of organs, but literal creation of new little beings, impossible new human beings.
Relative beings.
Right. Sort of.
Dynamic beings.
As some people think we are, offshoots of other beings from other places. Or the other theory, some people are into the alien astronaut theory, and some people just think it's just us humans that have been here a long time, and we used to have lots of technology that we just lost. Like something happened, like something terrible happened. And
like an apocalypse?
Yeah, some sort of awful thing just wiped everybody out, or it could be both.
Only the stupid people remained.
We're still learning, though.
That's probably what happened to Atlantis. They evolved themselves through their genetic manipulations, and they got to a new level of awareness and sort of evaporated, I guess, and leaving the rest of the planet to the ignorant.
And but let's take a look at that, and we're kind of saying it jokingly in a way, and sort of not, and sort of yes. The idea of a lost intelligence. So think of it for a minute, Kevin. Everything that we're using right now, the computer and other technologies in this studio that you look around and can see, very bright humans created this stuff for us. But are we smart enough to create it? Like, after the creators are gone, of course there's new people that are smart enough to do that. But let's face it, the masses don't create a computer. A few bright people within populations do.
Lazy people create things to help them be more lazy than what they are. That's why we have the phone, the automobile.
Oh, you mean convenience thing, yeah. So, I don't know if I'd say lazy, but I'd say people that want to make their lives easier, perhaps. So I guess you could call that lazy. Or do you just call that ambition towards quality of life purposes, perhaps? I wish I had that line back when my mom used to criticize me. So, possibilities of physical immortality, possibility of regrowing organs, possibility of inhabiting lifeless surfaces with teeming with life, including planets, are things being seriously discussed in the scientific community, as well as creating brand new beings through synthetic biology.
Stacy says the masses can hardly operate a computer in the first place. Quality of life does not require technology, and she's giving me a sticking her tongue out symbol.
Well, thank you, and thank you for listening. And I could agree with you. I think a return to naturalness is a great thing. I mean, we're talking about future technologies here today, but I myself am certainly all about the idea of living naturally, and especially in this genetic manipulation argument, as I stated earlier in the show, I'm really not a fan of them messing with the food supply. Food should stay as natural as possible. Raised by the sun and the rain and the elements and the contributions of animals and natural fertilizers and not a bunch of chemicals even. I don't like it when people put Kemlon on their lawn so that their lawn's bright green. killing off the bees. So, yes, Stacey, I do agree with you, and I agree with keeping things natural. At the same time, if we can use future technologies...
Did I say Stacey?
Oh, it's okay. Oh, Marcy. Oh, sorry. I should have known by the tongue sticking out that you meant Marcy.
Stacey?
You did.
My spirit guide. And it might have been Stacey that's saying that.
Oh.
I don't know.
Kevin spirit guide, and you didn't even know it. I'm not looking at the computer, folks, by the way.
She says, makes me glad I'm at the top of the hill and the runoff.
God. But.
Have an outhouse.
That's right. The runoff. Some people do that Kemlon thing. And I'm not being too harsh on people that do. I'm just like, why? Basically. And yes, some people think that that's one of the things killing off our bee population. So there you go. There's my rant on that. And it smells funny. So right now, I'd like to take a little break and discuss a couple of brief things and then back to our topic. One of them is that Brett Roone-Hillman, for those of you out there listening or that will be listening in the future, speaking of the future, our archive section. You can always listen to our archives at any time. Brett Roone-Hillman has not been with us and won't be for quite a few weeks. Nick Berry, who I thought was going to join us today, will probably be joining us next week. I'll see him Sunday. I'm sure something happened on the way. He lives a flexible nightlife schedule. I mean, I work at night. By nightlife, I don't mean I'm out there partying like a rock star. I mean, he works in a restaurant bar scenario, so you know how that is. Flexible schedule, something changes at the last minute. I happen to have this day and Sunday always off, so I can always do the show. He doesn't have that request in, so he probably just had a work issue. So, something about the first weeks have been funny, though, with all of our hosts, such as our first week with Evan Pass. He was terribly sick and he couldn't make it. I think Nick had a schedule thing and couldn't make it. And Kevin Baird showed up a week early. He showed up, he's outside. I'm like, it's not until next week. He's like, oh, okay. So sometimes it can be a good schedule. Sometimes the first week syndrome has hit Main Street Universe Network for pretty much every host we have. And so Brett will be joining us in about seven weeks or so. And he can also be found at his other show, Back to Basics, on the Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Now, Kevin, would you like to take this time to do a Horizon Oracle segment?
Sure.
And if you want... Oh, you have your... Okay.
Yeah. And I'd also like to say that you guys can find connections to our other shows on the Main Street Universe Network by going to our website, www.mainstreetuniverse.com. You can see little tiles there that relate to the other shows that are out there. So the first card that I get for our situation is the Busy card. It talks about moving from one bed to the next.
Oh, yes.
It shows an individual jumping from their sleeping bed onto the back of a bed of a truck because there's no time for breakfast, basically. This could be another definition. But it basically shows someone very busy or that they are putting their bed on the back of a truck and moving it to another location. Related to the time 707. And that you can go and look at the definitions for all the cards that I have by going to templeofgaia.com and clicking on the Horizon Oracle link. That's right there. I also do a radio show on Fridays from 6 to 7 where I do Horizon Oracle journeys and I do card drawings or basically state of the universe kind of drawings about information that we can expect to see over the next week or so. Sometimes the information goes out like 90 days or something. But my show on Fridays, after the show, I go back and build an archive page on the Main Street Universe website that shows all the cards that I've drawn so that the people who are listening in archive can go back and listen to the show and scroll through the cards as I drew them originally. So it's almost like being there live, but you get a chance to see if the card is reversed and what the image looks like, that kind of stuff. The next card that's up is also another vehicle card. It's the Blame card, B-L-A-M-E, and it's associated with the time 909. And this card is facing away from me, so really I'm looking at 909, and it looks like it's 606. So it's sort of like flipped the time in a sense. But it shows an individual looks like they're very angry or steaming about something that has them frustrated behind the wheel of a car, and it shows a rock or some kind of flying piece of debris has hit the windshield, created a crack in the windshield, and like a bang. Have you ever had something hit the windshield while you're driving?
Oh, yeah.
And it just like creates this big, loud sound. Well, that is really the universe inviting you to start thinking about something else. It's trying to interject a topic change and get your mind off of the thing that you're steaming and fuming about so you don't project your frustrations onto the drivers and passengers of the vehicles around you while you're in traffic. So with this card in the upside down position, it's really saying that to not get caught up in how other people are blaming you for the frustrations that are in their life and that they're just projecting it onto you, and that if you just ignore them being ticked off at you and it's not your fault and then just cope in the situation the best that you can, then you'll survive through the situation. There are people who are in our life that teach us how to be and how not to be, where to be and where not to be, where to be now or maybe where to be later kind of stuff. So that's what I get for that, is don't let someone else being angry about what's going on blame you for something you didn't do, but they're able to take one little minuscule thing that you did and turn that into the big tapestry of fault. So that's what I have for our cards today.
That was from the On the Horizon Oracle deck. And as a clarification for those that don't know, listening now or in the future or in days of future past, when the cards are in the reverse position for the Horizon Oracle deck, it means it's cards' relationship to others. Whereas up, right side up, it means internal into you, right? Sort of your thing. And reversed, it's your relationship to others.
Like a noun, really. It's a condition, or noun condition. Person, place, or thing, when it's reversed around.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it does face you, it's something that's in your face and that you have to face and work with.
Mm-hmm. A quality to work on and such, which is how I view readings. I view them as a consulting, things to work on in yourself. And today our topic is genetic manipulation, genetic science, synthetic biology. And we were discussing some of the possibilities of that, both good and bad. As I've stated over and over and over again on this show, and probably will again on other shows, my least favorite aspect of this is the messing with the food supply, which has already been done, and a lot of damage has already been done. I think the medical aspects of it, though, are a wave of the future and can be very helpful, especially in a voluntary sense, and as long as nothing really sci-fi horror sort of creepy goes on with growing fake humans and harvesting them, like in that movie we mentioned earlier. Yes. So this has the potential to be, as we mentioned, a super science, physical immortality, creating new beings, regrowing organs, terraforming planets, putting life onto lifeless surfaces, ones that don't take life as we sort of know it, and the possible creation of superhumans. The old version of genetic science was, as we mentioned early on in the show, and that was basically selective breeding. They would say, oh, we want a stronger horse, so we'll have this mare breed with this stud. And I've actually, by the way, witnessed this this act in progress, folks. I don't know if I recommend it, but...
Well, imagine if they crossed a horse with an albatross. We could have an actual Pegasus.
That's right. Have a winged horse. And on our marquee, you see, I put a mermaid as one of the pictures, if anybody happens to be staring at that. That's another aspect of it. I was talking to Thursday's host, Evan Pass, Zariana Radio, and he was talking about how his favorite author, Gene Wolfe, in the 80s, wrote a piece or a blog or an essay about how science, what is seen as science fiction, which will become modern science eventually.
Science fact.
And this was like in the 80s. Yeah, I was talking about these things and saying how when there was old fables of, you know, fairies and centaurs and all of this thing, you know, is science going to bring us to this fantasy reality at some point? And wasn't one of the old stories, now I know there's different ones, wasn't one of the old stories of a centaur was it was created as a slave species,
yeah,
like for work, because it was like the horse body, but smart enough because it had the man or the male or female human head and torso and all of that. I thought that was one of the stories of the centaur myth, even though there's many. Seems to be this reoccurring theme of creating these super strong but smart enough to function beings, both in myth and in theory, such as alien astronaut theory, and in human development, the crossbreeding of one stronger slave with another. Unfortunately, that's...
Well, it's funny that we're talking about evolution and, you know, manipulation, that kind of stuff. The Galapagos Islands, which is where Darwin got his start with everything, just got hit with two earthquakes. One was 4.4 on the Richter scale, and the other one happened about 48 minutes ago, and it was 5.1 on the Richter scale.
Wow, this just happened?
Yes.
Okay, we got this on our AP wire here.
Yes. So it's talking about maybe the apple cart of evolution is being upset.
A sign of being shaken.
Yes.
That's interesting. And speaking of something else that's considered to be, no pun intended, wow, we're full of really bad puns today, rock solid, but the pyramids, but it's a very serious issue. I know I'm sounding goofy, but it's a very serious issue. They're talking about some sources that I've seen online, and there were multiple ones, talking about the possible destruction of the pyramids. Some in the sort of extreme wing of the Muslim movement that's in charge in Egypt are talking about the destruction of the pyramids as pagan symbols that are no longer necessary. So that's a very... just
Marcy is saying that one cleric has an ancient argument about that, and the settlement would be to destroy them, or the sentiment would be to destroy them.
Right. So it's not something that's hopefully pushed forward too much. So it's pretty much just some lunatic out there, hopefully, saying this. He might be one with a little bit of pool, but hopefully.
A lot of mysteries that are hidden in the pyramids, and I think that by them, you know, taking action and trying to destroy them, they could end up revealing hidden truths that would further sort of like undermine their proof or their intent to be the one and only.
And, of course, the theories of the pyramid go from everything from energy centers to just being elaborate tombs for vainglorious emperors and such. Some think markers for above flying vehicles to for which to plot things. I've heard star charts. I've heard so many different things that people think.
One about the star charts where they pretty much match the three stars in the belt of Orion.
Mm-hmm.
Very true for me because it's that way in South America, it's that way over in Africa and other places around the world.
And I think it's interesting that some of these theories being proposed, and I mean, they're theories, but I think some of it is fascinating. Again, energy centers is another one that I've heard. Zohar's husband, Dr. Zohar Hieronymus, her husband, I think, is a fan of the idea of the pyramid, though it might be the other things as well, also as some sort of energy center dealing with its shape and the way its tunnels and channels are put together and such. He has a book out.
The Night Before Last was sort of in line with that, where I saw a cable that connected the tip of Big Ben to the tip of the Washington Monument. And it was like a cable car system that made it possible for people to travel from Washington, D.C. to London, back and forth on this cable that...
On a cable car. Remember the old, like the old skylines in amusement parks?
Yeah.
I used to love those when I was a kid. They just kind of slowly go over the hole. You'd kind of get up. I mean,
chalets also have those.
Yeah, yeah. I used to love that ride as a kid because I just liked staring down at the little. I don't remember how high they are now, but as a little kid, they looked really high, and you know, they'd go over the whole park.
A lot of liabilities now with insurance having a grip on everything that we do now.
But, in fact, there's a pretty popular amusement park around here, King's Dominion, that used to be known as one of the ones with some of the better rides. But, anyway, back to our topic. We're talking about genetic manipulation, biotechnology, synthetic biology. And we started off talking about cats. And, again, how cats... Their evolution with the human race started sort of with their voluntary engaging with us, sort of how dogs did. And, you know, dogs became domesticated. Dogs would live on the outskirts of where, right on the outskirts of where humans were, as one theory I've heard. And because, you know, we'd leave scraps of food or whatever, and they would come and get, oh, look, some, you know, free meal. These humans are leaving junk behind. Or just stuff that they would use in general. And cats are similar. The cats would take care of the rodents in a farmer's farm, for example. And then eventually, since these farmers went, well, these animals are useful to us. They're, you know, rodents can spread disease and eat precious crops.
In castles, back in the castle period, that the occupants of the castle would wipe their hands on the dogs at the dinner table. That way, because they didn't have napkins back then, that was the way that they
really?
their hands with the grease from the, you know, the leg bones and the other meat juices and what have you.
And eventually, as I said, these animals chose as their own natural experiment to be with humans, as you're saying, then they're alongside them in their house. Then they were selectively bred to be pets. And to be household members as well as being sometimes still, you know, farm cats or cats great for a barn. But what's funny is that these genetic scientists will talk about this evolution of cats and dogs becoming, you know, selectively breeding or horses like it's the same thing as, say, genetic modification of food. They're like, oh, well, selective breeding has been going on for forever. This is what they tell the politicians. They'll say, well, combining two different species has been going on, and they'll talk about it like it's really, really natural and that it's been going on forever. Now, however, when they go and talk to a financier or to someone that's going to provide money for their project, they talk about it's the wave of the future. So it's funny to see the two different approaches they use. If they're talking to the politicians or to the federal regulators, they talk about, oh, this is just a normal, natural process, you know. There's, you know, combining the blood of a flounder with a tomato is completely natural. We've been combining grains for years, and we've been selectively breeding animals like cats and dogs and horses and everything else for years. So the next step being, you know, apples that don't turn brown should just be seen as completely natural. And this is how they play it when they're talking to regulators. Now, if they're talking, again, to those who are going to give them money, financiers for the new experiment, then they say, welcome to the world of the future. Now, some people that are fans of the genetic food manipulation, one is, by the way, Kevin, maybe not one of your favorite intellectuals, Mr. James Randi, who is all for genetically modified food, basically just out of some emotional position, I think, more so than actual science.
I think his frustration comes from his last name, honestly. Very
Randy. But it's so funny because some of the arguments that the people that are for the genetically manipulated food make are just, they're totally just emotional. They're just, oh, we're scared. Some have even made the argument that we're spoiled, and now we're so spoiled and soft, and we live on such a soft pillow that we're complaining about the food. What's wrong with us? Shouldn't we be thankful for this? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And that, none of that is the issue. The issue is some companies have gotten away with messing with things and are causing disease and are causing allergy, and they should be called out for it, period. That's the issue. But luckily for us, the market is starting to turn in the favor of those that want more natural things again. And I can see that. I even see it as part of good news. In the job I work, my day job at Trader Joe's, I see in the store people even coming through the line telling me that their doctors, their medical doctors, not natural doctors, but medical doctors, doctors, if you will, for some, are recommending natural supplements and just natural food as part of their treatment, which is good to see that modern medicine doctors, exactly, that they're adopting a holistic attitude instead of just being people who hand out pills. Of course, there's still a ton of that, but, and I'm not saying all the pills are bad, folks, but let's face it, there's a little too much pill popping going on in the U.S. Are you sad? Well, here you go. Take this pill. That'll make you happy. And, of course, I understand that some people have extreme conditions and they need these pills for anxiety and all of that. I'm not saying that it's not legit on some levels. I'm just saying it's a little overdone. But it's good to see that doctors are going in a holistic direction, recommending everything from flaxseed to just recommending diet. And as simple as this sounds, there was a time where some of these medical doctors were very hard on the natural doctors, even taking them to court and, you know, other things. AMA has done it before, American Medical Association. In fact, American Medical Association a few times took the idea of a chiropractor to court, calling it a completely fraudulent science, and these things, battles have been going on for years. So, again, it's good to see the modern doctors catching up with a holistic approach as well, because I think that's the wise way to go about it. Use modern medicine as well as nature medicine.
So it's like a Wright brotherism. You know, the guys who said, oh, we're going to be flying everywhere, and the other people are like, no, abolish that.
Yeah. So it's the idea of incorporating new technology without – sorry, I think that was in calling. Of incorporating new technology with proper ethics and with a proper way of looking at nature. So it's good to see. There's some good news in this, all this mess. There's a big mess, and it's big, and it's, and to me it's caused a lot of problems, allergies, yeah, conditions, diseases even. But natural doctors are becoming a little bit more respected, even by medical doctors, and some are studying both. And I think that's great to see. And I'm seeing living examples of it in my everyday life because I work at a food store, and I also work near a supplement natural food store. So it's good to see that the medical establishment is coming around a little bit to natural medicine because a lot of it really does work, and a lot of it I've used very successfully. In fact, I knew somebody who even had a doctor say, well, if your infection doesn't go away, try colloidal silver. You know, I've used this personally to get rid of infections. Again, I'm not your doctor. Here's my disclaimer. Don't say that I told you so.
You could end up turning blue. Yeah.
You know what? I can tell you what the truth on that is. If it's made wrong, that's when the blue thing happens. First of all, you have to take an awful lot of it for that to happen, pretty much your whole life for like, you know, 50 years or something. What happens is if it's not diluted and dispersed properly in the water, basically the gray skin thing happens, which, by the way, doesn't really harm you. It just makes you look really strange. That's right. You'd have to, you know, I play that one off. You know, I'm from another planet. But
Pandora.
That's right. That when it's not properly dispersed in the water, it's it usually comes from homemade colloidal silver or silver water. Or what my friends from Romania called, that I used to work with, the water of life. They used it all the time. But, again, I'm not recommending it to anyone. I'm not your doctor. I'm just saying it's worked for me. And it's worked actually quite well for me. And I've known people whose medical doctor said, go ahead and give it a try. So, anyway, what I'm trying to say with all this is that there's some good news from this, and I'm not trying to be total doom and gloom. But the messing around with the food supply is, to me, the most outrageous side of all of this. And including, there's even people mentioning the possibility of splicing human genes with plants and animals. Here's the amazing danger of that. You could be engaging in a cannibalistic activity without knowing it. And cannibalism causes terrible conditions. So I think at this point, this is illegal. I don't think you're allowed to splice a human gene with a grain or whatever. Then you could have, imagine that spreading across the world, and now you're taking in human genetics when you're eating. And there's a reason why cannibalism, besides just the moral aspect of it, isn't done. It actually is not a healthy practice to eat so close to one's own.
Well, some people feel that eating pigs is a form of cannibalism.
Well, I've heard that, and pigs are very intelligent creatures. And the thing is let's look at the mad cow disease for a minute. Again, a lot of people think it's because they're refeeding cows to other cows, or they're refeeding for other conditions. It was refeeding pigs to other pigs in the pig slop. And they say this cannibalistic activity is what's creating more and more and more disease. So, again, one of the dangers is, somebody will do it somewhere. It's illegal now. You're not supposed to splice human genes with animals and food, but, you know, probably somebody's doing it somewhere in some unregulated part of the world with some, you know, funding from somebody, and we'll see. Hopefully proper morals and ethics will prevail in this matter. I think they will. Like I said, the good news side of it is working in the food industry, people are demanding more natural things all the time, especially in slightly more affluent areas they are. So those are some of the things we're discussing today is, A, how the scientists are comparing selective breeding and natural evolution to their little playtime with genetics, especially when they're talking to regulators. We're also talking about some of the other aspects of synthetic biology, one being the terraforming of planets, the creation of superhumans, physical immortality, perhaps even creating new beings entirely, or just regrowing of an organ. I saw one during my research on this, Kevin, where the guy was talking about for growing organs. He's like, well, you could take the liver and you could take, you know, the heart, and you could take this, and just create one big new organ for a person and put it in there. It's a kidney, heart, liver. It's a cliver, I think he actually called it. So there's all sorts of directions that they are considering, and this stuff is a little further along than some people may actually realize. Which brings me to a point. Has anyone seen out there? I'll post it. One of them is a picture in our marquee of a glowing cat. Now, I don't know if that glowing cat is a real genetically modified glow-in-the-dark cat or if it was just a picture somebody put up there to look like one. But there are real film footage and real-life existing glow-in-the-dark mice and cats that are basically what has happened is they've taken the genes from a glowing jellyfish, if you've seen those, like on the biology channels, you know, in the underwater specials and the nature channels. They take the proteins, the genetic DNA proteins from this glowing jellyfish and inject it into mice DNA and cat DNA. And then you have these glowing mice and glowing cats that glow under a certain light, kind of glow in the dark. The mice they had glowing, I think, two or three different colors, red and green and potentially blue. And it was, they're really strange.
Christmas mice.
Basically, and they were literally being packaged like this. Like, they were, maybe not Christmas, but they were being packaged as little gifts, like, for your kids. There was a company out there selling them. Then a regulation came about. I saw the demonstration. Then a regulation came about, and they can't do it now. So now the company's not allowed to just sell glowing mice as a pet. But they were doing it for a little while. Don't know how many of those things they got out into the world. But so far, there's been no apparent harm to the animals by doing this, other than the fact that they look really odd to see a glow-in-the-dark mouse. I had to double and triple check it. I'm like, is this real? I guess it is. And at first, I thought they were extracting it. I'm like, what, are they getting that from a lightning bug? I think I thought the same thing Kevin thought. It was from a underwater a jellyfish. Those glowing jellyfish, they took the DNA proteins from that, injected it with...
Imagine if they cross this with, like, a cuttlefish. And cuttlefish have chromophores that can change colors and patterns and that kind of stuff.
Like chameleon type.
So we would go to a new level of communication. We have body language, which is just very minor differences in how we use our face. But imagine if we could, like, take on stripes when we're showing someone that we don't like what they're doing or something. The nonverbal communications would be amazing on that.
Or literally green with envy or whatever, and you, yeah, and you communicate. Of course, that could also, but if you couldn't control it, then it could, like, you know, if it's a thought you want to hide, then it comes out, no, aha, it's you. I knew you were lying. You're green.
So the thing is that you could check honesty that way, too. So if you wanted to take a vote about how a group of people felt about X, Y, or Z, you wouldn't have to ask.
Right.
You'd have to look around the room.
And then there'd be no more lawyers, though, if you could tell people was lying. Also, there's also the funny ancient aspect of this that I brought up early on too, which was, you know, you see all these depictions of ancient gods with, you know, fish heads and elephant heads and lioness heads and all of these things.
Like a mermaid.
Then you have the mythological creatures and mermaids and winged fairies and all of these things. And science may get us there. Of course, for now, when talking to regulators, this biological synthetic technique is going to be promoted to use medically, to be used medically. And there are some examples, and they've had some successes, and they seem to have worked out pretty good. Or pretty well, if I was to speak English properly. And the foundation of synthetic biology, by that I mean the physical foundation, what they actually use to manipulate is sugar DNA, in case people didn't catch that earlier. They start off with the DNA of sugar. It seems to contain enough compounds. They say $25 worth of this sugar DNA that a scientist may purchase is enough to recreate like every genetic code in a human being. So it doesn't take that much of it to come up with all the information needed to recode and form new things, new beings, organs, or as we said before, the creation of life onto lifeless surfaces, which is one aspect they're going to look into. I guess they could say, okay, we could use that for food growth. But again, my least favorite part of this, don't want to eat stuff that was created in a lab like that. I think as still being natural beings that we are, natural food is the best way to go. And of course, that reminds me of someone that I had this conversation with as well yesterday, which was Mark Sutton. Saw him yesterday too, the author of Heart Healthy Pizza, and he can be reached at www.hearthealthypizza.com. And his book is of that title, and it is a vegan pizza book. He's been on our show before, been interviewed, and I know what he thinks about all this. He doesn't even eat oil. I don't think I can give up olive oil. I'm sorry. I love it way too much. But he makes some interesting points and about how you can use certain foods to, in a very natural way, to recreate the experience of something else. So his sauces he created with certain grains did a great job of mimicking cheese, and the one we had was really quite good that he brought over. And also remember, on our way out here, that our co-host Kevin Baer can be reached at www.com. And I think some of these technologies can be used intelligently. Let's hope they are. And remember that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you may have ever imagined. And I don't know about you, but I can imagine a lot. Let's hope that good ethics and good morals prevail. Have a good day, everyone. This is Woven Green.